This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. The transfer window is shut and over half the teams in the Sky Bet Championship, League One and League Two, are catching their breath as the first international break of the season is upon us. A time then for us to ooh and ah at who went where, look back on the first month of the season and hear a couple more fantastic stories from some of the personalities behind the headlines, in both cases in this episode reflecting their own long and winding path to their current roles on the official EFL podcast. So, five games down, 41 to go for the EFL 72 clubs, give or take half a dozen who still have one game to make up. By my elementary maths, that means we are already 10% of the way through the season. And who better to help us reflect on the Sky Bet Championship season to date than a man whose voice is synonymous with the world's original league competition. Paul Walker is into his 12th season commentating on the Championship's game of the day for first the BBC, then Channel 5. And now Quest. And talking of elementary maths, did I get that right? It is year 12 for you.
I've no idea. I'm impressed. You've done your research. I had no idea it was 12 seasons, but yeah, it probably is about right, that.
So that obviously takes you into national treasure status. Obviously, Giles Brandreth, various members of sort of aging royalty, and Paul Walker. I don't know if I asked you this the last time you came on last season, but does your voice ever get recognised in weird situations? Are you ever arguing with somebody in the supermarket over, I don't know, sweet corn, and all of a sudden somebody goes, "Are you Paul Walker?"
Very occasionally. Two things happen here. I'll never forget, one time in M&S, I was on my lunch break. I was still working in radio back then for the BBC in Sheffield. And I was perusing what sandwich to buy. And a guy came over, leaned in and said, "What do you think about Neil Warnock then? And the job he's doing at Bramall Lane?" And I've turned around and I said, "Pardon? What do you think about what's going on at Bramall Lane? I know it's you. And then we had a chat about how things were going at the time. But it's funny, isn't it, how people, because they hear your voice, automatically they think they know you. But the most frequent one I get is, "Paul Walker, oh, the famous actor who passed away. Well, I'm clearly not him, am I?" So that's the one that I get a lot. Not the, "Oh, you're the football commentator off the TV." It's usually, "Oh, you've got the same name as that famous actor from the Fast and the Furious films."
I would just like to confirm that our Paul Walker is very much still alive, or so it seems. He is actually moving on the pictures that I can see. Of all that time working on the various highlights program, is the one moment that stands out, Paul, one moment that I say you can have one and one only, and you got to take it away, and it's the only moment that you can replay? Is there something like instant that springs to mind? And the fact you just made a noise like a horse's lips makes me think perhaps not.
Good, bad?
You choose. It's an open-ended question.
Oh, do you know what? I'll be brutally honest here, and it's a mistake I made many years ago when I used to do the voiceover. I used to do the roundups on the League One and League Two at a place called Arkiva, which you might know. In Buckinghamshire. This is when
it's
the
like
BBC
a facilities place.
The BBC had the rights back then, and I made a fatal mistake of when I was doing. It might have been It was Macclesfield. So I was kind of talking around the pictures, and Sammy McElroy had been the manager, but hadn't been the manager for about a year. And it was just a slip. And I said, "Oh, Sammy McElroy's men then took a 2-goal lead, bloody, bloody, blah." It went through the various checks, slipped through the net, went out on air. And I got absolutely and rightly mullered for it by Macclesfield Town fans, who took great delight in pointing out that Sammy McElroy hadn't been their manager for about a year. So ever since that day, I learned a valuable lesson. Check, check, check again.
It's
one of those things that, you know, you keep at the back of your mind, and it just reminds you, don't always go with what you think straight away. Just double check.
Thanks for sharing. Right, two things I want to discuss with you today. I want to look back on where we are at this point, but also I want to reflect on the sort of closure of the transfer window. I'm thinking the two conversations are going to kind of meld backwards and forwards into one. But I'll start by asking you what sort of caught your eye in this last week of the transfer window?
Quite a few things, really. I mean, obviously, in my neck of the woods, Sheffield United, who I spent a lot of time covering back in the day. They've had a really challenging start, haven't they, under Slavisa Jokanovic. It was clear that they needed new faces in, and he came out after the game at Luton at the weekend, where they didn't play particularly well, let's be honest, where he said, look, the next few days are important. The board have to deliver what they promised me. I think he was looking for maybe four or five signings. I think in the end, they ended up with three, didn't they? A goalkeeper, Robin Olsen, who's coming on loan from Roma, who was at Everton. Morgan Gibbs-White and Conor Hourihan, added to the earlier arrival of Ben Davies.
So on paper, and you and I do talk, I won't say on a regular basis, but we did have a talk a few weeks ago, and you did mention that Sheffield United were badly in need of midfield legs and certainly needed a reboot and a reset.
Yeah.
So to that end, well, you've got a couple of half-decent players there, haven't you? Particularly Hourihan.
I'll come back to him in a moment. Gibbs-White, I really like. I think he can play in a variety of positions. And he, listening to his interview yesterday, he seems genuinely excited to be here. So I think he can give Jokanovic a different dimension. Hourihan, we know, has been around the block in this division, got promoted from this division, had a really big impact at Swansea last season when he went in there. He can bring a bit of quality on the ball, and obviously on set pieces is terrific. His distribution's fabulous. So competition in that midfield area is what was needed. He's got that now. And the goalkeeping situation was a strange one. Obviously Ramsdale went, and then he went with Verrips, who had a bit of a shocker at West Brom, and then he brought Fodringham in, who was an improvement on Verrips. But they brought in somebody with great stature, big game experience. That could actually be a really, really good signing. They were looking at Willy Caballero as well, I think, at one point yesterday.
Good Lord.
I mean, yeah, impressive 39 hairstyle. Now, I think he is. Yeah, mine and yours.
Indeed, impressive hairstyle, but so, lots of age, lots of years on the clock, I would suggest, just said.
So, yeah, satisfactory window, I think, for Sheffield United without being overly busy. I think he wanted five in, he got three, essentially four if you include Ben Davies. But you know, crucial couple of weeks now, isn't it, for the Blaze? They've got to reset and go again when they pick up after the international break, and hopefully the arrival of these new faces can do the trick for them.
Yeah, let me throw one at you. I'm trying to work out whether Swansea had a good window or a bad one. On the one side, losing Conor Roberts and Jamal Lowe feels like a fire sale going on. On the other hand, they've brought in Reece Williams on loan from Liverpool, and also Michael Obafemi. They actually paid a similar fee to Southampton that apparently they got from Bournemouth for Jamal Lowe. Is that a good or a bad window for them? I can't tell.
Time will tell, won't it? I think, you know, Swansea full stop are a bit of an unknown quantity at the moment whilst they get used to Russell Martin's style of play. The Jamal Lowe one surprised me a little bit, I must admit, allowing him to go, given how well he did for them last season. Obviously, the partnership he kind of struck up with Andre Ayew was very impressive. They didn't pay an enormous amount for him. What was it, 600 grand or something like that?
I think so, from Wigan.
There or thereabouts, give or take. 14 goals. He really impressed me last season. So the fact that he's been allowed to leave is interesting. But Russell Martin obviously feels that maybe he doesn't suit the way that he wants to go. Who knows? But Obafemi, I think Blackburn at one point were looking at him. Exciting young player. Having listened to Tony Mowbray, he was really keen to work with him. I've not seen an awful lot of him, if I'm honest, but you know, if he's good enough in Tony Mowbray's book, a man of that calibre and that experience, if he speaks in glowing terms about him, then obviously he could be a bit of a player. And they need something else maybe at the top of the pitch as well. Having seen Swansea earlier in the season, they were lacking in the final third, shall we say. So he could be a real wow. You know, Lowe going out, Obafemi coming in. That could be a really exciting signing. I like to see these kind of unknown young Premier League players coming into Championship clubs and seeing what they can do.
Yeah, and it can often be a mark of very decent scouting that people have looked and scrutinised somebody from the development age squads and know stuff that you and I don't yet. Anything else that catches your eye from the window?
Ryan Christie, I think, to Bournemouth, which I thought was an interesting one from Celtic. You know, a couple of years ago, he was setting the world alight, wasn't he? Playing for Scotland, 20 caps, I think, for his country. Could have been playing European football. Burnley wanted him as well. But he said, no, I want to go to Scott Parker and work with him. They tried to sign me when I was at Inverness several years ago, and that's always stuck with me. That, I think, is one of, in my opinion anyway, I know he wasn't setting the world alight with Celtic last year, but I think that is one of the standout signings of the window, if I'm honest.
Yeah, and then if you look at the housekeeping then that Bournemouth have done, with Dan Juma going off for, what, 25 million, but bringing in Jamal Lowe, we think, for about 1.5. I don't know what the fee is for Chris. There's some tidying up going on there. Scott Parker is letting youth flourish and be very much in and around the first team squad, but he's also shored it up with some experience and promise there as well with the two signings they've made with the window closing.
Yeah, definitely. And they've got to get out this year, really, haven't they? They've got to try and get promotion this season, but he looks like he's assembling a squad that's got good balance about it, as you say, mixture of youth, attacking flair, and I think Christie, you know, has the potential to be a real fans favourite down there. I really do.
Yeah, a couple of Watford departures caught my eye. There's an obvious one I'll come to last, but Andre Gray's gone on loan to QPR, and this is where we're probably going to meld into the chat about who's had a good start to the season, because I tell you what, on his day, he could really add some into that QPR attack, couldn't he?
Yeah, and I've been really impressed with them anyway. They've been my pick of the teams that I've seen so far this season. I've not seen Fulham live yet. I've seen West Brom. But Queen's Park Rangers, given where they've come from, the journey they've been on under Mark Warburton, just incrementally getting better and better and better. Right through the team, you could pick out Rob Dickey, who's just having the time of his life in front of goal. You've got Ilias Chair, who I'm a big fan of anyway, just floating around in behind the strikers. Chris Willock has really stepped it up again this season. And they were a team that I tipped to be a dark horse this season. I could see them doing it under Mark Warburton. As you say, adding someone like Andre Gray to a squad that already has the experience of Charlie Austin and Lyndon Dykes. You know, he's got real competition. He's got real option up there to mix it up if he wants to. I'm a big fan of his anyway. They're exciting to watch. They're scoring goals. They've shown character. They were losing at Middlesbrough, turned it round. They're unbeaten. And they're, what, third in the table? I think Mark Warburton so far has done a truly outstanding job. I know it's early days, but they're looking like the real deal to me, Queen's Park Rangers, I have to say.
And is this an avocation of the technical sporting director as well? Because quite clearly Les Ferdinand,
yeah.
You know, an absolute legend at the football club. He's taking that overseeing role. This is a club that did chop and change their managers a lot in the past, but have stuck with Mark Warburton. When he had, there was a little bit of a wobbly period, certainly sort of once we got into this point last season, I think they went a little bit awry and stuff, but they've stuck by him. He's laid down his foundations and now they're reaping the benefits.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at their form in the second half of last season, it was up there with the best, wasn't it? It was sensational, and they've just kept that momentum moving forward. The goalkeeper as well deserves a mention, Seni Dieng, who'd been there a long time but didn't make his debut until last season, I think it was. I think he'd been there 3-4 years, something like that. He's been outstanding, Seni Dieng, and they've got a real spine to the team. Johansson in midfield as well. Wily character, keeps them ticking over, brings experience and that nous in the middle of the park. I just think wherever you look around that team, you know, they've got a bit of something in every position that makes you think, yeah, they could go the distance here.
The other Watford departure is a proper end of an era
jobby,
isn't
it?
Troy Deeney, 2-year deal with his beloved Birmingham City, 11 years with Watford, 140 goals in 419 appearances, twice captained them to promotion. And again, Birmingham, another team that have you know, improved immeasurably under Lee Bowyer.
I watched them on Saturday, Clem, at Barnsley. They drew 1-1, and on chances created, they should have won the game. They really should have won the game. It was a brilliant game to watch, in fairness, I thought. Scott Hogan missed a couple of great chances. Chuck Sanike came off the bench. He missed a great chance as well. But the one thing I took away from that game, and I made the point to Lee Bowyer as well, I said, this looks like a team with real personality now. You know, they can bite and scrap with the best of them, but they can play as well. Defensively looked very strong, I thought. Midfield looks good. And you know what Lee Bowyer is going to go in there and do. He's going to make them organised, but they're going to be hungry. They're going to show great desire as well. And they showed all of those qualities on Saturday. And I think the big thing that Bowyer's brought is an attitude of they go into every game wanting, believing they can win, which I don't think was always the case under the previous manager, Aitor Karanka, where, let's be honest, there were games where you looked at it and thought, they've come here not to get beat. Well, he's spun that round now. They're going into the games with the ultimate belief that they can go out and win. The game at Sheffield United on the opening day was a bit of a statement, I thought. They picked up some notable results since then as well. And Andre Gray going... Troy Deeney going there is a huge one, isn't it? We all know that he's wanted to play for Birmingham one day. He leaves a great legacy at Watford. I'm fascinated to see how he does there, but he is going to get one heck of a reception, isn't he, when he turns out, when he pulls that blue shirt on.
Yeah, and it's more than... I mean, it's obviously the experience. It's obviously the having been there and done it. That comes into the equation. But just that sort of profound lift it will give to all the supporters could give them yet another 5% and a winning mentality and the ability to finish off some of those chances, as you say, that they made against Barnsley but didn't finish. And just that general captaining ability and willing to be a figurehead.
Well, that's it. And he'll be the cheerleader as well. If he's not playing, he'll be the one cheerleading from the sides. He'll be the one cajoling, offering the young players encouragement. And he will not stand for anything less than 100%, will he? You know, he'll put those demands on his teammates. And I think that can only be good for the rest of that squad.
Yeah. So, four teams remain unbeaten in the Championship. We've already discussed Bournemouth. We've already discussed QPR. Yeah. I mean, Fulham and West Brom I got to be careful saying it's all over at this point in the season, but I mean, they look mighty impressive, as though they've got a real sense of purpose and they know exactly what they need to do this season.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, West Bromwich Albion, I mean, Valera and Ishmael, we know what he did at Barnsley last year. He's just picked that template up from what he had at Barnsley, moved it to the Hawthorns, and they've just run with it. You know, we talked about Sheffield United earlier on, and they got well and truly bullied, trampled all over at the Hawthorns on that midweek game, and West Brom, quite rightly, were worthy winners. Alex Mowat, you know, just running things from midfield, who Ishmael knew from his time at Barnsley. They're going to take some stopping, aren't they? They get it forward, but when they get it forward, they play good football in the final third. And I actually thought that he got a bit of a rough ride in some quarters last year, Ishmael, because Barnsley were labelled as this long ball team. Well, there's nothing wrong, in my view, in getting the ball forward quickly and playing in the opposition's half, as it were. And they played some really good stuff.
Yeah,
they're going to take some stopping, aren't they? I'm yet to see Fulham live in the flesh. I'm looking forward to that, and I'll see them on the other side of the break when they go to Blackpool, which will be an interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, you make a really good point, and you've kind of made it twice that, you know, just because you're direct and get the ball forward quickly doesn't mean it has to be just big lump and unattractive to watch. I guess the thing with Fulham is, and there's been a lot of attention on Fabio Cavallio, but Andrej Mitrovic, I mean, 4 goals in 5 appearances, clearly struggles in the Premier League, but it's just a machine when it comes to the second tier.
Yeah, well, he's just a menace, isn't he? He's done it time and time again. And to keep a player like that is testament to Fulham, really. I mean, he's obviously going to be the key, I think, between them going up and maybe dipping into the playoffs, because that's the only thing that can happen to Fulham, in my view, is that they dip out the top two and end up in the playoffs. But I simply can't look beyond the top two that we've got at the moment, Fulham and West Brom. Queen's Park Rangers, I think, could push them. Maybe Bournemouth as well, but I just can't see them being overhauled. Can you?
I would say not. I'm trying to keep this podcast alive for another 103 episodes that producer Dave wants out of us this season. But we may be going round and round in circles. And maybe instead of having a Fulham and a West Brom chat in future weeks and episodes, we may just repeat this on a little loop and Dave and I can go to the pub. Not that we condone drinking if you're a youngster, please. Just drink with all moderation as per guidelines. A couple of other teams I want to talk to you about. Huddersfield, who had that absolute mullering at the hands of Fulham and then suddenly win three in a row and they're suddenly, confounding everybody.
I'll be honest, I thought they were going to really struggle this season. They might well still struggle, but you can't take it away from Carlos Corberan. They've started brilliantly. I was at Bramall Lane. Sorry to keep bringing Sheffield United into the equation, but I was
expecting
Lane.
It, mate. You've had 9 of your 10 mentions. If it gets any further from here, I'm going to have to stop you and we'll start putting beeps in.
It didn't end well for the Blades that day, but all credit to Huddersfield. I thought they'd struggle. They've kept Lewis O'Brien, who I think is central really to what they're all about in the middle of the park. That was really, really important. If they can get Josh Koroma firing again, he had a bit of an injury last year, he missed a fair chunk of the season. If they can get him firing as well, maybe they can have a successful season. We'll see.
Like Stoke City. And I think the thing that is quite satisfactory, I'm sure it is from supporters' point of view, but from afar as well, is they've obviously had this enormous squad as a result of chopping the change in manager, Gary Rower into Nathan Jones, into Michael O'Neill. But what is lovely to see is players like Joseph Bursic and Harry Souter and Josh Tymon, who, all right, weren't sort of, they're not local lads as such that have started to make a name for themselves, but they've come in and been in those development age squads at Stoke for a few years, gone out up for their respective loan periods, and suddenly are starting to form the backbone of the team, which implies there's a kind of ethos and there's a kind of culture starting to emerge at Stoke City.
Well, that needed to happen, Clem, didn't it? Let's be honest. The fans will be thrilled to see, you know, the types of players that you've mentioned coming through and some of the big earners who perhaps didn't fancy it at this level moving on. I think we all kind of saw this coming, I think, with Michael O'Neill. Slowly but surely, he started moulding that squad, shipping players out and making his own mark on that team. I saw them a bit towards the end of last season. You could just see the green shoots of recovery beginning to sprout. And, you know, vastly experienced manager, as we all know. I look at Østergaard coming in to that back line, excellent signing in my view. Vrančić, who was wonderful with Norwich a couple of years ago in their title win. He brings a bit of nous and a bit of quality and a bit of sparkle on his day. Stephen Fletcher, wily old Stephen Fletcher, still doing what he does at the top end of the pitch. They've got Tyrese Campbell, I think, still to come back, haven't they? Further
they
down
missed,
the line.
They missed,
yeah, missed badly last
season.
Klukas, always capable of knocking in a goal or two. So, yeah, again, good to see Stoke up there. It was always going to be a slow process. Patience was always going to be the key. They've got the right manager, in my view, knows what he's doing. And hopefully the good times aren't too far away from Stoke. But my God, have they had to go to hell and back to get to this point.
Perhaps not to hell and back as far as Coventry City have had to go. And you could argue over the past half decade that Mark Robbins, pound for pound, has achieved as much as, if not more than any other EFL manager in terms of repositioning of that football club.
Amazing. Amazing. I speak to him from time to time. Obviously, I know him from way back when he was at Rotherham and when he was at Barnsley. But what he's done there is nothing short of incredible, isn't it? You know, they had to move home last year playing at St Andrews. They've now gone back to their proper home where they're doing the business again. He's just a good manager, plain and simple. Good manager, good bloke, great to talk football with. Not a great sense of humour, mind you. He needs to he needs to find his sense of humour a little bit, does Mark? But you know, I get on with it.
Just hold the line a sec, Paul, if you would, please, because I'm delighted
get him
to say,
on. Get
I'm
him
delighted
on.
To say, we're bringing in our special guest today. Mark Robbins joins us.
I'd love
us.
To talk to him.
Yeah, fine, okay. You've got away with that. You started to list the sort of South Yorkshire clubs again there, and I thought I was just waiting to do the beep for mention of number 10. So well held back. Listen, and obviously Jack Grealish incarnate as well in Callum O'Hare.
Yeah, fabulous player. I do like him. He goes everywhere, doesn't he? They've got Hamer as well and Waghorn. That looks to be a really good signing. Jokeresh, who was at Brighton, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Very, very canny signings, living within their means. Could they be an outside bet for sneaking a top six place? And goodness me, what an achievement that would be. Mark won't be looking at that necessarily. He'll be looking to make sure that they just improve on last year and aren't looking over their shoulders again. But they've done a fabulous job, and I can't wait to go back there this season.
Listen, that's the sort of good stuff. Is the if I was to say who's disappointed you this season, who would you pick out?
You're going to bleep me, aren't you?
So you're going to mention them, and I suspect you're going to mention Forest as well.
Forest, they've had a torrid time, haven't they? Forest, they have been very active on deadline day. They've brought in a whole raft of signings in the hope that that can move them further up the table. I just don't know what's going on there. Chris Hughton, a lovely guy, experienced manager, knows what to do in the Championship, but for whatever reason, they just cannot buy a win at the moment. And, you know, it's interesting. They've brought a real mix of foreign players in. Obviously, the owners have got ties to Olympiacos in particular. Some of the names I've not heard of, in fairness. Brian Ojeda, by the looks of it. Mohamed Draga. James Garner they brought in, who looks to be a really good signing, probably their best signing so far, in fairness. Did really well there last season. Max Lowe they brought in from Sheffield United. But they really need to get their skates on, don't they? Because they're already looking like they're in big, big trouble, Nottingham Forest. A big club like that, sat propping up the rest, is not a good sight to see, really, unless you're a Derby County fan, perhaps. But for whatever reason, it's just not happening. And I hope he manages to turn it round. So I've got a lot of respect, as I know a lot of people have, for Chris Hughton. You know, I'd hate to see him struggling for much longer, but it's clear that they've got a lot of work to do, and it's imperative they can gel these players together. And I will mention Middlesbrough, Clem, as well, whilst I'm at it. Neil Warnock's been busy again. And
how dare you? Under the bracket of the question about who's disappointed you?
No, not who's disappointed me. No,
I'm going to veer off
and go back to your original question about...
But we need to set context in this, of course. Otherwise, it just looks as though you're gratuitously slagging Middlesbrough off.
We don't allow
that on this podcast.
Do you ever think, Clem, that I would slag Middlesbrough off, given who their manager is?
Of course not. Go on, you have your say, and I'll try and have mine.
I just want to pick out a player who has joined Middlesbrough, and you asked me earlier on about any players that might have leapt out, and Onel Hernandez leapt out at me. I think that is a brilliant bit of business. If he can recreate the form that he had for Norwich 2 years ago, wow, that could be a terrific signing. He was one of those players 2 years ago in that great Norwich team that romped the league, who got me out of my seat. Admittedly, in their last title win, he didn't feature as much, but that potentially is a signing that will have Middlesbrough fans getting out of their seats. If Neil can get him back to the kind of form that he had 2 years ago, I thought, yeah, that's a terrific signing. They've signed Andras Sporar as well from Sporting, and James Lea Saliki. I know less about those two, but Hernandez looks to be a brilliant one for me.
Well, Saliki played four times in the Champions League for Rennes last season. And it's a good blend, isn't it? And that, I mean, I think that's what a lot of teams are doing now. You know, Middlesbrough have signed, some unknowns from our point of view, if you're not a follower of European football. No, they've also delved into the non-league for a couple of players. Paul, lovely to see you. You're allowed one gratuitous mention of Sheffield United again. Just say the words, because we're running out of time, mate. Do you want to do it, or do you want to save it for next time?
Sheffield United.
There you go. He said it, ladies and gentlemen. Will your tonsils be warbling this weekend, or are they being rested as there are?
They will, Clem. They will. I'm making my first ever trip to Plough Lane to watch AFC Wimbledon play Oxford United.
Okay, so there is a Quest EFL highlights programme this coming weekend, even though there's no championship, even though 8 of the 12 League One fixtures have been curtailed. Oh, that's good. It's time to focus a bit of TLC on the lower leagues. Great to talk to you, mate.
You too, my friend. Take care.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
So, I mentioned at the start of this week's episode that a couple of our guests' own personal journeys have had plenty of twists and turns, and that's certainly the case with the man I'm about to introduce. Now, he has had several caretaker managerial spells at both Accrington Stanley, where he was also permanent manager for 6 months, and Wigan Athletic, both over the past decade. But now, Liam Richardson's name has been screwed rather than glued to the gaffer's office door at the DW Stadium. And I bet you've been asked this a zillion million times, but don't ever accuse me of originality, Liam. Why now? Why was this the moment to go for it?
I don't think there's ever really a perfect time, is there? I think, certainly at the start of my journey, I was fortunate to go into it, at a good club in Accrington. I've managed to work for 11 and 12 years at different football clubs with Paul Cook, and gathered obviously a lot of experience, a lot of different environments, and then, like you say, it comes to a point where an opportunity presents itself and it matches your own expectations and criteria with your own career, and hopefully, thankfully, Wigan's certainly that.
Yeah, I mean, do people's perceptions come into it, and do you think there's a shelf life for an assistant manager who has aspirations to be a manager, where if you stay too long in that role you kind of become pigeonholed as a specialist?
Yeah, I think people will have an opinion. I think the industry throws many opinions and things.
Your hesitation there suggests that am I overthinking this, Liam?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, listen,
thank you for being so polite.
Again, I think even with circumstance over the last 18 months, 2 years, when working in different football clubs, Chesterfield, Portsmouth, Wigan with Paul Cook, and very successful, if truth be known, we privately thought, we'd certainly, as a partnership, go into the Premier League or certainly hold a status, high-end championship. But as with circumstance surrounding Wigan Athletic, at a point, it become apparent, with the administration, etc., there were different pathways to certainly, either continue journeys or begin new pathways, and that's what happened.
Yeah. Have there been moments since you two separated, particularly since he then took a job, where you might normally have sort of acceded, a decision to him, where you've sort of turned around and gone, oh, right, no, this is me now?
I think very fortunate we've got a really close relationship, both professionally and personally. I think you'll know Paul yourself. He's probably one of the most honest people you'll come across. So we were always, dead open and transparent with certain things. He obviously has always known my aspirations and known me as a character and a person, which is, why we kind of continue to work successfully together. During the process of the administration, very supportive. And then obviously when he went to join Ipswich, I obviously re-carried that support over to himself as well.
Yeah. You've mentioned the A word a few times already. I mean, just how much did the administration, obviously on the final whistle at the end of the season before last, how much did it take out of you personally? How much do you think it took out of the club? How much do you think it took out of the supporters?
Oh, I don't think you can really underestimate exactly what it is. I delivered a presentation to the FA regarding administration, because I don't think there's enough information around with the LMA, the FA, regarding that subject, because the first question people will ask you is, what does administration mean? We see it going along, Sky Sports, and it's all dramatised. But when you're in the middle of it and you're seeing people lose their jobs, you're seeing people's contracts either being reduced dramatically and people leaving, and players, agents all of a sudden in and around the football club, and it becomes rudderless quite quickly. And then, with no ownership, no chief exec, the structure that really you take for granted. And obviously our administration came within the pandemic as well. So it was a little bit of a crisis within a crisis. So I don't fully feel, you know, certainly, are you ever going to be ready for something like that? No. You know, is it an someone told me right at the beginning of the experience, right at the start of the administration, it'd be a fantastic experience. And I'm still waiting for that, although we've come through it. And, you know, thankfully we came out the other end with what seems, you know, good ownership and a fantastic chief exec.
Yeah, but I've had this conversation with a few of the guys over the years. I can remember Michael Appleton when he was down at Portsmouth and it happened to him. You kind of, because there are so few people around, the manager kind of becomes the figurehead for everybody, don't they? You do carry the hopes and dreams of many, many people on your shoulders.
You do, and you quickly become aware of people's, you know, certainly personal issues, you know, obviously regarding the jobs. I think on the first day, I think 78 people got made redundant.
Awful.
Players and agents were leaving. You know, we were trying to keep going and kind of commit to the day, you know, with the staff. You know, staff obviously getting anxious and moving jobs also. And probably the biggest challenge that I faced, and again, you know, without underestimating it or overestimating it, within a day, you more or less become owner, chief exec, head of medical, head of sports science, the manager, the coach, all in one day, and you've kind of got to delve into them such roles, because you know somebody needs, you know, people need a figurehead to come and ask them questions too, and certainly ask the decisions, because you know the administrators have got a job to do and they do their own job with trying to keep the club alive, and they'll make them decisions whether it's good for the club or not. It'll be, you know, it's certainly good for how they foresee it.
Does anything come to mind as the bizarrest question you got asked to answer? You know, were you short of parcel tape to send stuff out to customers at home? Or does anything come to mind of something ridiculous you got asked?
Well, one thing came to mind. We were well into it and we were trying to design a pre-season. Obviously, that was late because we weren't sure what league we were going to be in. And, you know, you're trying to then galvanise a group of people, whether it's staff. And at half-time, one of the lads came up to me and says, you know, I don't think I'm going to be able to play second half because I've got to go and get a medical in Manchester. And at the time, I think we only had 12 players, so it was tougher to fulfil the fixture. And he was shaking the lads' hands as the first half were finishing, and he ran across the pitch, got changed, and see his car zooming out the car park with the agent.
Wow, Liam. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard of anything like that before. Goodness gracious me. I mean, from escaping relegation by a point at the end of last season, you've accumulated some talent this season, haven't you? And you've snared, you know, you got Joe Bennett in, didn't you, over the last sort of 48 hours. Was he out of contract at Cardiff?
He was. I think he was in negotiations with a couple. But yeah, yeah. Thankfully, we've had the opportunity to work together. As with many of the lads who have joined, I think we ended the season with four players, respectively. Three of them were young lads and one of them had a long-term injury. So we were always going to sign a lot of players and it was going to be hard work. And we had an opportunity where we felt, you know, we had to get to a certain level quite quickly, which with a group of people that have joined so far, you know, obviously we didn't have any staff as well. So it was important that we put a good staff together, which I feel we have, an experienced staff, diverse staff, and like you say, a lot of good people on the playing side of it as well.
Yeah, coming from many different backgrounds as well. I mean, I noticed Jason Kerr coming in as well. It was obviously St Johnstone, wasn't it? Was he their captain when they won the Scottish Cup and the League Cup? So you've got character there as well as a good defender.
Absolutely. Again, you know, with the administration, with the 18 months and, you know, the non-fans going in, I felt, you know, it's certainly my job and, you know, the head of recruitment, although made redundant, he still offered a helping hand last December and into this window as well. And, you know, it's our job to make sure we've got our eye on the ball, so to speak, and make sure we kind of try and recruit the best we can. Because, again, all departments fell by the wayside. So even in the last 18 months, you know, they've had no recruitment department with all the, you know, gathering of information and everything else. So it's been a task to get certain departments up and running quite quickly as well.
What a baptism of fire for you, mate. Elsewhere in Sky Bet League One, then, not a single team remains unbeaten after Wigan's victory over Portsmouth and Sheffield Wednesday's defeat at Morecambe last weekend. Shrewsbury Town claimed their first points of the season, seeing off Gillingham, and with the international break, just four games remain this coming weekend. Listen, you've played five and beaten three of the promotion favourites. What are your initial impressions of the division this season, Liam?
Exactly the same as I thought it was before a ball was kicked. I think it's going to be possibly one of the most competitive, aggressive seasons in League One. You know, you look at the teams, and it's not being disrespectful for any. I don't name, I'm just naming off, obviously, size of attendance and football club, the Sheffield Wednesdays, Ipswich, Sunderland, Portsmouth, you know, just to name a couple. And they will all think and possibly think they should get promoted out of the division, but you know, then you look at the other end with the newly promoted teams, with the Cheltenhams, Cambridge, Mortons. There's no easy game in this league. You know, we've made it quite clear from where we were. We felt, obviously, with the numbers that we had and the work that we've been able to put into the group, you know, we did start behind a few, but we felt we had to make strides quite quickly, and we want to make them small steps and firstly be competitive in every game. And, you know, hopefully we'll do that.
Liam, it's been a brilliant chat. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. On the subject of silly questions that you've got asked, I've got to ask you about this. Wigan hold applause in memory of Keith the Duck at halftime versus Portsmouth. Wigan Athletic held a minute's applause at halftime at the DW Stadium for a duck who sadly died. The duck named Keith belonged to a supporter of the Latics. His image was shown on a big screen and applauded by 9,571 fans.
I think it was a very moving moment for everybody in the stadium.
How very diplomatically said. Yeah. Did the boys in the dressing room know much about it, or did you just get told afterwards?
I think the subs who were warming up quickly filled the lads in after the game, and it became apparent. And thankfully, what we thought was not a great moment became, you know, quite fun and jovial for everybody involved.
Yeah, I am tempted to fill the next 10 seconds of the official EFL podcast with a little sort of moment of the applause for Keith the Duck. Sadly, we must move on. Keep up the great work, Gaffer. Lovely to talk to you, Liam.
No, thank you for the opportunity. Thank you. Great seeing you.
This is the official EFL podcast.
Into Sky Bet League 2, where our next guest has finally arrived after a near 15-year journey. He was born in Curitiba in Brazil. He began his career with Vasco da Gama, where his teammates included Philip Coutinho. He played for the Brazilian under-20 side alongside Oscar, but then his career moved around the Brazilian regional leagues to two regional clubs in Mallorca. He's nodding while he listens to me here. It was when he returned home that he received a phone call from an agent asking him if he'd be interested in playing in England. He was, and he spent the past five seasons working his way up the non-leagues, first with Whitehall FC, then Worthing, and finally Torquay United. Lucas Covellan joined Port Vale in June at the age of 30. Lucas, is there any point in you coming on, or have I summarised your career and we can just all go for a drink?
Well, I think you finished there. You can finish there and then you go for a drink, isn't it? Because I don't think you need to talk anymore.
No, I got to talk to you because, mate, I love stories like this. I mean, at any point, Lucas, did you give up on your football dream?
No, never. And I still don't give up. I still think I have more years ahead, and I still think League 2 is not going to be the last step in my career. So I think I'm going to be pushing forward, and we never know till when I stop, basically. As I said, I'll keep push forward and see when and where I'm going to end up.
There will be people listening to this who have had a challenging last 18 months with the pandemic, who are maybe blocked in their lives at the moment. They don't know a way forward. Have you always been this positive? Have you always had this energy in the way you attack life?
Yeah, I think so. That comes through from my family, I believe. My mom is a very positive person as well, and she taught me so much. And I believe that resilience that I have today is from my family, and for me as well. Family is the most important thing, and I think I have this root, very strong root with my family that keeps me. Pushing forward, you know, as you mentioned, COVID, I didn't have a chance to go this year to Brazil, wow. Which was a little bit complicated, let's say, which I go every summer to Brazil, and then I can get those times with my family, which I can get that renewing of my energy and chakra, let's say, to align the chakra.
Yeah, so you mean the format that we're talking now, which is over kind of Zoom call type of thing, I'm guessing you're doing that 2-3 times a week, are you, to Brazil to speak to mama?
Yeah, I do speak with them a lot. I like to keep in contact with them when I'm a little bit down, and when the weather is too gray, I go and talk to them a little bit. To give me a little light and a little bit color. So yes, I talk to my sisters, my parents, my mom, my dad. Then I have my nephew, my niece as well in Brazil. So it's a little bit of a mess, but it's very good as well to talk to them all the time.
If you don't want to live in a country that is sometimes grey, I don't know why you chose to come and live in England, because we have far too much of it.
I mean, yeah, south of Brazil can be really cold as well. So, Curitiba is not that far as England. I would say it's very, very grey and rainy. It could be snowy sometimes.
Stop it. I've got an image of Brazil in my head. You're spoiling it for me.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
It's very different when as I said, like Curitiba can be very cold, and then when I say about Brazil, they never think about Brazil being cold or having like snow. Just thinking about beaches and being in the sun, Copacabana, and that's it, isn't it? Carnival.
And Lucas, do you also think of this? No tempo que eu era só, que não tinha amor nenhum, meu coração batia assim, tum.
That's my dad listening to those songs, not me.
Though. Oh, yeah, okay, thanks for that. I deserve that, didn't I? I had to stop it quickly because producer Dave is panicking. He'll have to pay musical royalties, so I could only get away with 20 seconds, and then we'll be sending some money off to receive it or something like that. Listen, I'm going to ask you a really tough question, but I can already sense that it's okay for me to ask this. How big a mental challenge is it, Lucas, when you see some of the players that you've grown up with and have played with head off to Barcelona or head off to Chelsea and your career goes in a different direction?
If they're there, I think they deserve being there, you know. I think every person is different, and I'm not jealous or I don't envy them, because as the same way, people, I played with lots of people which now they couldn't play football because life is different. So basically they stopped playing football, and then I still have the opportunity to play football, not in the highest level in Premier League, let's say. But I'm still like now in League Two, which I think I'm very lucky to be in here as well, because I can't look at people like Oscar or Coutinho, which they made their amazing careers and go in there and ended them. So I think they're there because they worked hard as well, and then they're very talented to be there. Also, if I'm in League Two now, I have the talent and I'm I push forward and I keep working hard every day. So I think the mindset is every person is different. So you keep push forward, as you never know when is your limits. You basically need to be ready to be lucky, because you never know when your luck is going to come and you do an amazing game. You have a scout looking for a striker, and then basically you see, oh, that keeper is amazing. We need that keeper. That keeper on championship, and we go from there. So you never know when the luck is going to come to you. So be ready to be lucky.
Yeah, and listen, I wasn't trying to depict your story as a sad one, but I think it's an important lesson for people that may have been struggling over the last year and a half, that life can turn in a moment. Sadly, sometimes it can turn adversely, Lucas, but it can also turn very positively in a 100%. Split second of a bit of Foho music.
Yeah, always. I think, the positiveness as well, being a Brazilian, it runs through the veins, is in the blood, as the music, as the people. I think we're very happy people, and it's not just the family. I think it's the roots of Brazil is still on me. So
yeah. There are two moments I want to talk to you about, and they've both happened in the last 3 months as we record this. 20th of June this year, the National League playoff final. You're playing for Torquay United. Hartlepool United are leading and about to be promoted back to the Football League. You go up for a corner, which you crazy goalkeepers do from time to time in desperate moments. Do you want to tell us exactly what happened next? Because it kind of put you on the football map, didn't it?
Yes. I think that was one of the happiest moments of my career, if not one of the happiest moments of my life. And talking about that just gives me the chills all the time, because he comes that memory again and again and again. I think it was a corner a few minutes before the 90s as well. And I was going up, and when I reached the halfway line, one of my players said, no, don't go now, because it's too early. Don't go now, it's too early. And then I listened, and then I respected. And then so I came back to my goal. That corner ended up in nothing, basically. And few minutes after, we had another corner. And then I said, no one is going to talk to me right now, because I'm staying in the 18-yard box 100%. So when the ball was just getting closer to me, I just made the run in front of everyone, and I get the highest point that I could get in that time, you know. And
it's perfect, Lucas. It is absolutely perfect.
Oh wow! And soon I got the contact with the ball, and then I turned my head. I think it was just like the image of the ball going in slow motion inside the goal, because it was something that I couldn't believe, that the ball was just crossing the line and in slow-mo. So it gave me the chills again. It's like,
right. Well, do you know, mate, what the best bit of it all is, I think when it comes to celebrate, you don't actually know what to do, do you? You're kind of just confused.
Lost, yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, brilliant.
It's because it's something that when you're a keeper, and then when you go to training and then you score goals, we basically train a celebration of how, when you're going to score a goal, you're just going to go there and gonna. But when you end up scoring, and in a certain like important goal, and then at that time, I didn't know what to do. It was just like some enthusiasm just going through me, and then with all the loud like scream from the people as well, on that day on the stadium, the Torquay fans, it was just like mental. It was something that I think I'm never going to forget, you know, because it was such a beautiful moment, and it gave us the chance to win the National League and the playoffs of the National League.
Well, listen, 3 days. I mean, Torquay United didn't make it back into the Football League, but you did make it 3 days later. You signed for Port Vale. Mm. Again, that sense of satisfaction to sort of finally reach the league stage. I mean, I bet that was one with you reaching for the Zoom link to dial back home, wasn't it, and tell mum?
Yeah, 100%. When I knew it, that I made it to the Football League, I talked to them. They were like so happy as well for me and for what I'm achieving in life. And the only thing that I wish they could be closer and then we could share like those moments like in here, but I'm sure when we're gonna see each other again, it's gonna be the strongest hug. And from all those years we haven't seen each other, so I believe it's gonna be great.
Yeah. And well, you're a big fella, as you say, so I bet you give good hugs. I bet you give very powerful hugs. I bet when those arms go around your family, there's no way of escaping. You are working with Daryl Clark, so I'm imagining you've learned some new words while you've been at Port Vale. He has an interesting vocabulary, does my friend, doesn't he?
He's a very enthusiastic as well manager. Yeah. I'm very happy to work with him. He's a very positive guy as well. I'm learning. I've been just like maybe 2-3 months now with him and I'm already learning so much. I believe we're gonna do well this year.
Yeah, well, it certainly worked for you last weekend, because elsewhere in Sky Bet League 2, leaders Forest Green Rovers suffered their first defeat of the season at the hands of Lucas Port Vale. Harrogate Town are now the only team in the division with an unbeaten record. All 24 teams are in action this coming weekend. So I guess the question is, where do Port Vale fit in the promotion picture, Lucas? So, you know, you've got a manager who's won many promotions, who's won a promotion from this division with Bristol Rovers a few years ago. Are you talking up the possibility?
Well, I think our mentality right now is game by game. We have a very strong group, a very strong unit. We built in much more than just a group, as a family. Everyone is get along with everyone, and I believe that's very important, which like is not just in the pitch but outside the pitch as well. We have like a very strong relationship with everyone, so I believe it's just gonna build this chemistry as now with the on the pitch, and game by game we're gonna pick up points and we'll see. We're going to end up at the end of the season. I believe we're going to succeed.
It has been an absolute joy to talk to you. Your story is absolutely inspirational. Producer Dave, can I play him a few more seconds? I can play you a few more seconds of music before you go. Hold on. Hold the line, everybody. You know what I've just realised, Lucas? I haven't got a clue what that man is singing. If I've picked a record, it's not bad words. You've reassured me.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us on the official EFL podcast. I love your story. Good luck to everybody up Port Vale for the rest of the season.
Thank you very much, you guys, and take care, everyone.
That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Lucas Coverlan, Liam Richardson, and commentator extraordinaire Paul Walker. If you enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Keith the Duck. Rest in peace.
The official EFL podcast.